Court will proceed to the fifth case, Amax Coal versus the Office of OWCP. Ms. Klaus.
May it please the Court, I am Laura Klaus, counsel for Amex Coal Company. Your Honor, this is not a case of a miner who was forced to leave the coal mines on account of some disabling lung disease. Robert Tanner did not have pneumoconiosis when he left the coal mines in 1985. He was not totally disabled by any respiratory or pulmonary disease when he left the coal mines in March of 1985. He was offered early retirement, and he took it. He then traveled, played golf, did yard work, and kept smoking cigarettes. He started smoking cigarettes before he started working as a miner, and he kept smoking cigarettes after his retirement. Not just one package, not one and a half packages, but two and as many as three packages a day. And not surprisingly, he got sick. He got heart disease. He suffered some heart attacks. He developed a disabling respiratory or pulmonary impairment. But this court has held that under these circumstances, when we know why the miner left coal mine employment and it was not due to pneumoconiosis, then the miner is not entitled to benefits under the Act, even if he can prove later that he got pneumoconiosis and that he became totally disabled due to it. That's what the court held in Vigna. That's what the court held in Foster. It wasn't based on the regulations that applied. It was based on the statute. And in this case, the statute itself precludes entitlement as a matter of law. And that's assuming that Mr. Tanner was able to prove that he was totally disabled due to pneumoconiosis. But as to that and the alternative, this is a case in which the ALJ awarded benefits for total disability due to pneumoconiosis, even though no doctor affirmatively stated that this miner's coal mine employment was the cause of his totally disabling respiratory or pulmonary impairment.
No doctor
definitively and affirmatively said it was. The record shows that Dr. Sandoval, who examined the claimant first in terms of the litigation, said that COPD can be related to exposure to coal dust and as such represents coal miner pneumoconiosis. Can be is not the same as is. And this court has held in other decisions that ruling out or an inability to rule out coal dust as a factor should not preclude a denial of benefits. Then we come to Dr. Cohn. And Dr. Cohn said that he proved that Tanner had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. No one disputes that. He also proved that chronic obstructive pulmonary disease can be caused by coal mine employment.
Did he say it was due to exposure to coal dust?
What he said was...
Does this answer what I asked?
He said it was due to both coal dust and smoking.
I wasn't going to finish what I wanted to ask you.
What he said was there is no history of any other significant occupational exposure or a cause of lung disease other than his exposure to coal dust and tobacco smoke. But that doesn't answer the question. That says, okay, there's two risk factors. Some of the other doctors said that there were three, coal dust exposure, tobacco smoking, and heart disease.
Isn't the law pretty clear, though, that if someone brings in six doctors to say no, like the coal company does, if you bring in two, are we just to take because they outnumbered them?
Absolutely not.
The law is pretty clear on that, isn't it?
The law is very clear on that. Numerical superiority of witnesses doesn't carry the day. So the question is whether Dr. Cohn's opinion that because this minor had coal dust exposure and because he was a cigarette smoker, that means that his respiratory or pulmonary impairment must be due to both. That doesn't mean that coal dust exposure had a material adverse impact on this miner's health. That means that Dr. Cohn couldn't rule it out. It was present, it was a factor, and so it must have been. That's the beginning point. The beginning point is you have risk factors, two risk factors, three risk factors. And what the Court of Appeals in National Mining Association versus Department of Labor said is, all right, Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease can be caused by coal mine employment. There's no presumption, however, that in any individual case, a particular miner's COPD is due to that particular miner's coal dust exposure. That's the claimant's burden of proof. And we submit that Dr. Cohn's opinion falls short. It establishes that coal dust exposure was a risk factor, but it doesn't establish or explain why Mr. Tanner's coal dust exposure caused Mr. Tanner's COPD. And the rest of the ALJ's decision is loaded with mistakes.
You know, most of these cases that we see are come up with you sitting at the other table here. it's rare that these benefits are granted in these cases, I think, at least the ones that we see here. And this one was reviewed twice by the Board of Review, the second time after it sent it back for clarification of some of the findings. And it seems to me, given that there were eight doctors who testified or gave evidence here, and a couple that pointed in favor of the claimant, that we ought to find that that's sufficient to support the finding that this 37 years in the mine contributed to his present condition.
There's a problem with that. And the problem with that is that the Supreme Court has rejected that type of analysis. The Supreme Court has said that the mere presence of favorable evidence doesn't establish a fact, and that it's error to find in favor of a claimant simply because the record contains some positive evidence. We would dispute that Dr. Cohn's opinion and Dr. Sandoval's opinion constitute substantial evidence in the first place, but even accepting that it did, what the obligation on the judge is to weigh that evidence and to weigh it according to permissible reasons, to credit or discredit evidence according to permissible reasons. And when the judge relies on impermissible reasons, either to credit or to discredit, the case has to go back. And this case did go back at least once. The board, when it reviewed the ALJ's initial determination, said, no, you're right, Amex Coal Company. This judge did not rely on permissible reasons, and sent the case back to the judge to do it again. And what that judge did on remand was simply reinstate her findings, exactly the same ones, respectfully disagreeing with the board. And the frustration from Amex's point of view is that here is the decision that was virtually...
Well, there must have been a change, because the board didn't send it back.
The board didn't send it
the second
back
time.
The second
they passed
time.
It on and said that the record supported the findings.
That's right, and we believe that that was an incorrect decision, because the ALJ's decision itself contains the same mistakes. The reliance on whether a doctor personally examined the claimant, accepting Dr. Cohn's inaccurate smoking history, but rejecting Dr. DeHaan's opinion because there was a four-year difference in terms of when he thought the miner left coal mine employment and when he actually left coal mine employment. He discredited Dr. Castle and Dr. Wren for relying on too narrow of a definition of pneumoconiosis when nothing in their opinion reflects any reliance on too narrow of a definition of pneumoconiosis to exclude coal dust as a factor here. He discredited Dr. Tudor as hostile, evasive, controlling, giving unwarranted criticism of the medical...
Well, that's the kind of doctor you want to get to represent the Amex Coal Company.
He was unwavering, and yet the ALJ did not discredit Dr. Cohn's opinion, who was equally unwavering. Dr. Tudor might not have been nice to the claimant's counsel during the deposition, but that didn't make him hostile. The difference in the ALJ's rejection or acceptance of medical opinion depended on whether the doctors agreed with the results she wanted to reach. And the Supreme Court has said that the systematic exaggeration or devaluation of evidence is not permissible fact-finding, and that the parties have confidence in the administrative process when decisions are made based on good reasons and fair decision-making, and this decision falls short.
Ms. Klaus, what you skipped over, or maybe you didn't, but the ALJ's view of Dr. Shelby, which was even more troubling to me than the Dr. Tudor assessment. Troubling in what the ALJ said about it.
Right, because the ALJ faulted Dr. Shelby for focusing too much on this minor smoking history.
Well, she said he completely ignored the coal dust.
Which, of course, he did not. And a simple reading of his opinion, which is at EX2, and his deposition transcript, which I believe is at Employer's Exhibit 37, shows that he didn't ignore it at all. In fact, he had the same information that Dr. Cohen did because he reviewed Dr. Cohen's report. All of the doctors had the same information.
Oh, wait. Dr. Cohen examined the man, didn't he?
Dr. Cohen examined.
Thoroughly examined.
That's correct. And this court has said that the mere fact...
Wait. The doctor who you're referring did not examine him. He just read over the pages of the report.
No, Dr. Selby examined the claimant, too. There were three doctors who examined, Selby, Sandoval, and Cohen. So the fact of that personal examination doesn't make a difference because you don't diagnose pneumoconiosis by looking at a claimant. And I see my time is up.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Klaus. Okay. Ms. Vogel?
May it please the court. Your Honor, this case came down to the cause of Mr. Tanner's chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which we call COPD. All of these doctors, except for Dr. Selby, and the two parties agree that he was totally disabled by a pulmonary condition. So the issue was, is the cause. Now, the doctor's opinions were in conflict. The ALJ considered all of these opinions. There's no dispute about that. It is important that the court defer to the judge's fact-finding here because it is the judge that has the broad discretion in determining witness credibility. And it is also interesting that the medical opinions that came out of this case were issued just shortly after researchers and scientists finished their studies, the release of their studies, showing the connection between coal dust and COPD. AMAX's five witnesses chose to stick to the old limited view that if there's no restriction, there's no pneumoconiosis. If there's no obstruction on these pulmonary function tests, there's no pneumoconiosis. An obstructive impairment is only caused by smoking. It's never caused by coal dust. That was the evidence in this case from AMAX's witnesses. Now, Dr. Cohen used modern medicine to analyze this condition, and he did diagnose pneumoconiosis in the form of COPD based on the coal miner's work history, 37 years, most of which came before our modern dust regulations. He did it based on the history of the symptoms, all related to COPD arising out of coal mine employment. He made the diagnosis also based on the pulmonary function study showing the obstruction and the severity of the obstruction. When he used the modern medical literature, he used it to show the support for his diagnosis. He didn't rely just on what these studies said to make his diagnosis. He looked at Mr. Tanner. He examined him. The administrative law just took note of the fact that the act, the regulations, and the modern medical literature support what Dr. Cohen explained. Now, we get into each one of these physicians' opinions. And I don't know if we're reading the same record or not, but the ALJ was right on target when she evaluated all of AMAX's witnesses. Dr. Selby will not diagnose pneumoconiosis unless he has a positive chest x-ray. He said that plain and clear at deposition. That means he'll diagnose medical pneumoconiosis, but not legal pneumoconiosis. And that is inconsistent with the act and the regulations. His report said that the miner isn't even disabled from work. When the tests themselves show, and you don't even need a doctor's opinion to support it because the tests themselves show the disability. He called the relationship between COPD and dust exposure a myth. He called it a myth. The ALJ is finding that his opinion is weak as rational. Dr. Tudor was discounted for many reasons. He says the disease is COPD, not related to coal dust, but to smoking. He says COPD is an obstructive disease due to smoking. He only used the medical definition of co-worker's pneumoconiosis at deposition. And in his second report and at deposition, he criticized all of this modern science on the relationship, all of it. Then Dr. Cohen came back and defended against the criticism, okay? And it came down to Dr. Tudor does not like the studies himself personally. But there are no epidemiological studies that refute anything from the studies that Dr. Cohen discussed. And I don't really want to talk about Dr. Tudor's conduct at deposition. AMAX itself was not there. It was represented by counsel. Appellate counsel was not there. I was there. That was the last deposition that I ever participated in of Dr. Tudor. And I won't go back. And the ALJ was not aware of this when she wrote her first opinion. She wasn't aware of it when she wrote the second one either.
How many times have you taken Dr. Tudor's deposition?
I counted 35 times, and there have probably been about 40, 50 since then. At that deposition, he revealed a pro-employer bias by his conduct. He resented any questions that were asked of him about the relationship between COPD and coal dust. He made objections to my questions on cross-examination. That's an advocate. That's not objectivity. Now,
does he speak that highly of you?
Well, the other attorneys in the firm say he asks about me from time to time. And it's important here that AMAX doesn't deny or defend against his conduct. It just speculates that maybe something else happened. Well, it doesn't matter.
The problem in these cases is that some people blame it all on smoking, and some people blame it all on exposure to coal dust. And the ALJs have to decide in individual cases what is the more likely cause, whether exposure to coal dust is a likely cause. And everybody has their own opinions about that, and that's what the evidence in this case shows, doesn't it?
Well, there is the opinion that it's all from smoking. The other side of the opinion, I've never seen an opinion that said that the obstruction is only from coal dust. It's mixed. It's coal dust and the smoking. I don't think anybody denies that smoking causes obstruction. And I think we'll reach the day when they're not going to deny about the coal dust either. And today we accept obstructions is from smoking. We just accept it. Everybody does.
And
nobody in this case
secondhand smoke, too.
Pardon me?
And from secondhand smoke, too.
And from secondhand smoke. You know, it's not outside the realm of reason that certain witnesses were biased in this case. And in this circuit, and I think it's
which
only this circuit.
Which ones do you say were biased?
Were biased.
All the ones from
Adam? All
no,
the doctors?
No. The ones we're talking about are Dr. Tudor and Dr. Selby. In this circuit and only this circuit, treating physicians are assumed to be biased. In only this circuit are treating physicians presumed to have bias because they are tempted to accommodate their patients. While here, we don't have
an assumption. Where do you get that case that says they're assumed to be biased?
Peabody versus Helms.
Peabody versus Helms.
And I think the Rayleigh case, and I know it's cited in AMAX's brief because they always cite that. They always cite that case. But we don't have any assumptions in this case. We have a record. Dr. Tudor simply did not help the judge, and neither did Dr. Selby, on the critical issue of causation, and that's what witnesses are for. They're supposed to help. We get to Dr. Wren, and Dr. Wren limited his opinion to the medical form of pneumoconiosis, and the ALJ explained that in both of her decisions. AMAX did not rehabilitate that witness, and Dr. Castle, Dr. Dahan, their opinions reflect what Dr. Rin was saying, although they're just a little bit different. Everybody requires something different. But in the end, it came down to the ALJ preferring Dr. Cohen's opinion because it was the best explained. And AMAC's witnesses explain nothing except a personal disagreement with modern literature. The credibility is not about what their bottom line conclusion is, but how they got there. And the record supports the ALJ's finding. Her credibility determinations and findings should be affirmed in this case. Now, I just have one other point about this Vigna and Foster issue. May I?
Yeah, you have another minute.
The point in both of those cases was that a non-pulmonary impairment or disability that precedes a pulmonary disability can preclude benefits. And we don't have any pre-existing disability in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Vogel. Ms. Klaus, I think your time has expired, but you may have 1 minute.
And I'll try not to talk like a Federal Express commercial. There are differences of opinion. Some doctors believe one thing, some doctors believe another. But the question here is what the doctor's opinions are based on in this record. And the doctors who found that it was smoking, and it was Tanner's continued smoking, 2 to 3 packs a day for the equivalent of 70 years, 500,000 cigarettes, that smoking caused his chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. They didn't rely on any view that was hostile. They relied on the symptoms that he presented. They relied on the waxing and waning of physical findings. They relied on the test results. They relied on the absence of x-ray evidence of pneumoconiosis. They relied on the specific facts in the particular case. Dr. Cohn simply said, he's a coal miner, therefore coal dust contributes. He didn't respond to the inconsistency of the physical findings, the fact that the symptoms were not consistent with a coal dust-related disease, the fact that the test showed reversibility, the fact that the blood gas tests, even though they produced a lessening on exercise, did not reach the level of disability. He didn't rely on the facts of the specific case. What he said and what Dr. Sandoval said was, could be. Could be isn't good enough. And the claimants and the employers and the director all have the burden here to establish their points, but it's the claimant's burden of proof, and the claimant's proof didn't meet it, and the judge's decision is wrong. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Klaus. Thank you, Ms. Vogel. The case is taken under advisement.